We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
91.7 Memphis.
Welcome once again to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the Graduate Hotel in Oxford, Mississippi.
When you're feeling way down low, got no place to go, can't find a lover, can't find a friend, can't call your so-and-so, put your hand on the radio, can you
Thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're in the lobby of this beautiful Graduate Hotel, downtown Oxford, Mississippi, just a block or so from the square. Full house, great man, great show for y'all tonight. We've got a fine vocalist and songwriter, Allie Durr, is here, who she's not only so very talented, but so very courageous. I believe she is going to play with our very own Yalla Bushwhackers. That takes a special moxie, ladies and gentlemen. R.L. Boyce is here, speaking of moxie, Grammy-nominated Hill Country Blues man. And our author tonight, y'all, Jamila Minix is here. Jamila Minix in this beautiful book, Moonrise Over New Jessup. And man, we've got some great stuff to talk about, and she is going to read from it. So glad to have Jamila here, y'all. Y'all ready to do it? Y'all please bring this house band to the stage. We love them. It is the Yalla Bushwhackers.
Sting.
Yeah, the Bushwhackers, y'all. One more time for him, please. Our house band, Ricky Burkhead, Slade Lewis, Keon Love, and of course up front there, Paul Tate, our band leader, guitarist, and vocalist. Oh, the Yellow Bushwhackers kind of settling in for a mellow, kind of a jazzy mood there. That's kind of the way they feel whenever they're in a hotel lobby. Because they think, hey, anything could happen, because these people probably don't know me. That's always a good thing, right, guys? No, they're wonderful gentlemen, even after you get to know them. All righty, R.L.'s album, Rollin' and Tumblin', got him a Grammy nomination, Best Traditional Blues Album. Latest release is the EP called True Man. I like what they say about R.L.'s music. It perfectly captures the juke joint, moonshine-fueled picnic party life of the North Mississippi Blues. And we're bringing it right here to the Hotel Graduate. Y'all welcome, R.L. Boyce.
I sit out. Thank you.
y'all. One more time. Old Black Nettie, who got drawn? Talk I do. Need no woman hanging around by my bed. Want my gal. Look at that moon shining down through those trees. Oh, Black Mary, who got drunk?
Get all over the world, y'all.
Thank you, Lord, that you seen another day. Don't you know someone didn't even wake up this morning saying, thank you, Lord, for another day. Better get out of here. Thank y'all. See y'all the next time.
RL Boys, y'all. One more time.
Thank you, man.
Our own Ricky Burke here. Ricky Burkhead helping him out there, and on that tambourine, Will Miles. Will Miles. That is the real stuff. I don't know. Now we're certainly getting them rooms upstairs, right? They're going to have the whole the Chancellor's Suite with the Eli Key. Yeah, they should. We want to remind you that you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on WUMS right here in Oxford, Mississippi, 92.1 FM. You're also hearing us on the stations of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, Alabama Public Radio, WYXR Community Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, WUTC Public Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thank you, Chattanooga. And WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee. I think we got Tennessee covered. All right, also our sponsors, Arts Council of Clinton, the Community Foundation for Mississippi, Delta State University Foundation Incorporated. We will be at Delta State March 4th. That's a Saturday. Please alert your pals or come over and join us. We'll have a big show over there. Cannon Motors, Chicory Market, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, Dr. Ralph and Douglas Vance, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, Leslie Westbrook, McCormick's at the Inn at Ole Miss, the Mississippi Arts Commission, Mississippi Humanities Council, National Endowment for the Arts, Party Waiting to Happen, Ron and Becky Fader Charitable Foundation, Snooki and Mary Lou Williams Foundation, Water Valley, Mississippi, Square Books, Taproot Audio Design, The Lyric Oxford, Visit Oxford, Wayne and Weta Drinkwater, the Yazoo County Convention Bureau, the Yachtin Potawatomi Arts Council, and the good folks at the Graduate Hotel Oxford. Thank you for having us in your home. It's very nice and cozy in here. We're just having a big time. Thank you, my man. Thank you so much. Keon, love y'all. Keeping the love going. Yes. All right, Jamila Minix in this beautiful book, Moonrise Over New Jessup, 2021 winner of the Penn Bellwether Prize for Socially Engaged Fiction, takes place in 1957 as Alice Young steps off the bus at New Jessup, Alabama. She worries about where's the colored entrance, but guess what? There is no colored entrance at New Jessup, Alabama. It's an all-black town. And she cannot believe what she discovers there. She also falls in love, Alice does, with Raymond Campbell, who's a community organizer and civil rights worker, very dangerous work in those days, and it is indeed dangerous. And, of course, there's some great family drama in there. And possibly the best pig roast scene I have ever read in literature. Y'all please welcome Jamila Minix. I'll dig you right over here.
know about a pig roast?
Ma'am, please. We will talk about staying up all night turning a pig, I believe. Yes, but you capture it beautifully. I had already eaten lunch. I was totally fine. You made me completely hungry.
Oh, okay. Well, I did my job then.
Yes, you did. New Jessup, Alabama, for some of our maybe college-age folks or folks who just may not be aware, there were many communities, enclaves, call them what you like. We had one in Mississippi, Mount Bayou.
That's right.
Totally black town back in the day. Tell me about New Jessup.
So New Jessup is based on about 1,200 black towns and settlements that we've had in this country since the late 18th century. So, you know, before emancipation, we had these enclaves that popped up where people could be in community with one another, and they could be anything from like a city block where one or two families were, or it could be a place like Mount Bayou, or, you know, my people are Alabama, so we have Hobson City and Africatown, Alabama, which in this period of time would have been about 10, 15,000 people. So these were places you could see it and you could be it. You know, you could see a teacher and be a teacher, see a doctor and be a doctor. So, you know, we had these places where we were thriving.
Yeah, that there is a scene, it's early in the book, when Alice, I guess she gets off the bus and immediately starts looking around for the colored entrance. It's sort of, it's wonderful and heartbreaking at the same time, like so much of the book. Another aspect of this era that maybe some people may not be familiar with is that not all the black population wanted to be integrated. They were, even in the 50s, with all the Brown versus Board, there were plenty that wanted to do their own thing necessarily, right?
I mean, I think, you know, we could look around this room. I don't know how many of y'all are in here, but we have a good crowd in here. And I think we look around and everybody in this room, if we ask you what the definition of freedom is, everybody's going to have a different answer. And in a place like this where you had, where you could see it and you could be it, you know, was the question was, what is leaving my community and abandoning the generations of community that we built up around here gonna accomplish for me and my children and the generations coming after me that I'll never know? So, you know, there was a lot of question about why is it that we needed to leave our community, or why do we have to break up our community in order to progress?
And in this case, there's a swamp that separates.
Yes.
New Jessup from the white community. And of course many of the folks in New Jessup work and trade with the folks over there in the white.
Yes.
It turns into a very complicated argument, doesn't it? In your book and in real life as well.
I mean, I hope that art imitates life, right? So in this case, you know, I thought that this book came about because it was going to be a black family sitting around the holidays. And it was going to be 1954 when Brown was decided, and everybody's fussing and fighting. You know, it's the holidays anyway, so everybody's fussing about something. And so of course, this particular idea was that people were going to be sitting around arguing, fussing about Brown. And, you know, it really came down to what all the people we talked about, Patience earlier, what would Patience or Percy or Raymond or Dot or Alice think freedom is, and what do they think progress looks like? So, you know, I it was a really fascinating way to sort of approach it.
That is exactly the beauty of the book, I think, is you have so many different characters. The black character, they're all black, but they all have a different idea of integration, what equality means, what we as our people are striving for.
That's right.
And man, it is, it's like you said, as many opinions even on something like that. And then you look at New Jessup, it was right on the Tombigbee River, so they're fishing out of the river, they're shooting deer. I mean, they really don't need anybody, right? I mean, it's kind of almost, I don't know, it's idyllic, very much so.
And
you grew up around the Tombigbee, didn't you?
No, so my people are Alabama, at least four generations. I'm the first one that came up outside Alabama.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But my family is very much there to this day, and I always say that, you know, nowhere is the sky is blue and nowhere is the sun is bright. And nowhere do I know love like when I'm in Alabama. I mean, sorry, y'all, but it's in my heart.
Tourism Board will be calling you. That is perfect. One more thing before we do want to hear you read something from this beautiful book. It is something to read. But anybody that would look at you, well, the first thing that would come to their mind is, my goodness, that young lady worked for the Labor Department in the Trump administration. And you did.
I did. I worked as a career
I mean, you just scream it. When I look at you, I think labor lawyer in the Trump administration. No question.
So to clarify, I worked as a labor lawyer, and the majority of my work was in civil rights work, but I also did a lot of work in the Labor Department prosecuting people who steal from pension funds and wrongfully deprive people of their health benefits. So that was the majority of my time, but I worked my way up, and about maybe a month or so before the 2016 election, I took this job with the political appointees, thinking that the political leadership would look very different. But I thought that it would be sort of a dereliction of duty for me to say, I don't like the political leadership, so I'm going to bounce. I thought I would have a voice to be able to make sure that communities I cared about were covered, and I thought I would be able to make sure. Thank you. I really, really hoped that I would be able to make sure that the Department of Labor kept its mission to its constituents. So that's why.
Oh, man, thank you for your service.
You know, I did what I could.
And so I saw an interview with you where you wrote the first draft of this book just really, really in a month or something, almost fever dream.
It really was a fever dream. But you know what? This book feels very ancestral to me. You know, Alice and them, they all are somebody's ancestor. So even though it's fiction, you know, it's made up, these are all people that at some level lived. I mean, a lot of these jokes in the book are like inside jokes from my family. Their church names are like Morningstar Baptist is where our home church in Demopolis. So this was very much a labor of love and a love letter, my love letter to my family and my love letter to Alabama.
That is just beautiful. We're going to hear from the book right now, y'all. Again, it's called Moonrise Over New Jessup. It is from our good buddies at Algonquin Books, Jamelia Minix, y'all. Thank you.
So I'm going to read just Alice coming into New Jessup, but just so y'all know, my mama's been gone a while now, so I dedicated this to my mama in her place among the stars. So, chapter one. The moon rises and sets, stitching eternity together, night by night. Love spun thread binds family when even years or blue skies stand between one and another's touch. Generations travel the same footprints, reach hands to the same climbing branches, and warm the same brown skin under the Alabama sun. Now, maybe family brings to mind only blood, marital relations, and it's easy to understand that way of thinking. But love by my hands tethers generations to generations, as well as kin by skin, in this place where all in me and of me can thrive. Yet even the strongest thread will snap with constant tension and no slack. The heavens overflow with memories lost. So, as life requires, I hold taut and I give. In some ways, my people know, if in some, they never will. But in all ways, my moon rises and sets for family. So, in eternity, the time had come for me to leave the home where I was born. The sun was setting and the half-bald red sweet gum around the fields announced November, just a few days coming. But 1957 was still October old when my landlord ended up face down on the ground for trying to drag me behind him to the tool shed. I was the last to leave the home house in Rensselaer. Daddy had passed a couple weeks before, and I had settled him next to Mama, though his burial left me scrambling for the rent. My sister Rosie was rooming with a nice family in Chicago doing hair, and my need to keep a roof over my head had mellowed my worry to wonder about when her next letter would arrive. There was plenty of gleaning left to make November's payment, and then I'd scratch around for whatever came available to buy myself some time. I had never planned or wanted to leave Alabama, but with old man Todd shouting curses at my back, his face split open and gushing sweet gum red, my plans to stay began to fade. After a night at the neighbor's and an hours-long walk with the dawn, I arrived at the bus station with just my thrown-together knapsack. The man behind the bus counter assured me that my little money would carry me to Birmingham, not Nashville or Louisville or Cleveland, let alone Chicago. Birmingham, he said, and no further. In the hours I waited on the bus to depart, the world came undone piece by piece. Unable to get to a place I never wanted to go, with ticket in hand to a place I knew not a single soul. First, the landscape flattened. Direction was next, north, south, east, west, all headed towards the unfamiliar, and then finally color until everything faded to black and white. I rode the bus into this flat, directionless, colorless world until it shushed to a stop in my new home. Not that I knew it at the time. No, my ticket read Birmingham, and all I knew was that we had stopped somewhere between nowhere in particular and the big city. We had traveled 100 country miles, or maybe 10, stopped once, twice, four times, I don't know. I was huddled next to my window, watching the world blurn by as the man seated next to me kept up one-sided conversation about returning north after visiting with his wife and children down country. Somewhere along the way, he started worrying me about the brown paper bag on my lap and the chicken grease soaking through to my dress, but that oily stain hardly ruined anything. The gray threads had known color when I first sewed it. Red plaid. Well, that stain just turned light gray to ash and ash gray to black, so somewhere near Needham, I offered him the chicken. He took it and finally left me alone. We shushed to a stop and the bus emptied, some getting off, hugging loved ones, hello, some taking luggage from the belly of the bus, and most everybody stretching, smiling, and laughing underneath the blue sky day. But the stops were all the same to me, so I stayed inside with my head against the glass, feeling the sun's warmth on the window. And that's when a red-heeled shoe clicked its way up the sidewalk. Two of them, if I'm honest, though it wasn't so much the shoes that caught my eye, but the bronze legs inside them. They continued up the way towards the sidewalk cafe before disappearing through the front door. My eyes traveled from the cafe to the paved sidewalk to the row of brick front shops lining the white avenue. The sun gleamed from the white tile at the bus depot, and a polished chrome dog leapt over the door. Couple folks, one like me, the other nothing like me, looked around unsure of what we were seeing. When the man seated next to me returned smelling of cigarettes and shoe polish, he urged me off the bus with a dime from his own pocket. Miss, our next stop ain't for quite a while, and this here's a good place to stretch your legs. Why don't you go on inside and get yourself a Coca-Cola before we pull off again? Before stepping foot to pavement, I hovered in the doorway of that bus. To the left and the right, the avenue, the sidewalk, the storefronts extended to the horizon in either direction. But reaching the front door of the depot, the colored entrance was nowhere in sight. To my right, a shoeshine man chewed a toothpick while studying the shoe and the polish in his hands from every angle. Behind me, from the bus window, the man urged me through the door, only the last thing I needed was to be arrested for going through the front just to buy a Coke. "Help you, miss?" asked the shoeshine man. Till the words eased from his mouth, he'd done his level best to ignore me. With the weather-beaten hand-me-downs on my feet, it was no wonder why. "I'm looking for the colored entrance, please," I said to the pavement, not wanting to be pegged ignorant of city ways and where they hid the Negro doorways. "You won't find one of them here," he said. "Just walk in." "I'd prefer the colored entrance, please," I insisted. He seemed an unusual man, perhaps a prankster of some sort, with the long limbs, triangular head, and bulging eyes of a chameleon. Just the sort to make trouble for folks and dart away. I ain't got one of them, because ain't nothing but Negroes in this town, is what I'm telling you. Look around and see if you see any white folks other than these sorry few from the buses. He smirked and returned his attention to the shoe in his hand, satisfied he knew the lay of the land. A dark brown man sold bus tickets and answered questions inside, while two soldiers in army-issue khaki rushed past me, one with the deep mulberry skin of the ready harvest, and the other, my same sun gold cinnamon with dark freckles on his cheeks, who placed a hand to his peaked cap. A light-skinned woman with a wild mane of bottle red hair rushed into a yellow cab driven by a portly man of pecan complexion. He sped past an ebony police officer in white gloves holding palms up, meaning stop. A deep bronze man across the street wore paint-covered bib overalls, smoking a cigarette next to another bib overalled man, Coco Brown. And the family by the drink machine, well, the mama, she was hot yellow, but her husband was a rich, deep brown to match some good, peaty soil. One child favored him, one her, and one fell to a brown somewhere in the middle, and that was just within those few feet of me at the depot. Up and down the avenue, Negroes of every shade came together like the dusk in a fall forest. I should have been glad, relieved to find such a sight on my journey, but my knees gave out and I sank onto the bench next to the shoeshine man. I buried my face in my hands and sobbed. "Ain't our folks' usual reaction when they first arrive in New Jessup," he said, patting my shoulder with the light taps of a man unaccustomed to comforting people. I stopped crying in time to wave the bus off, too exhausted to shed another drop. "Is there a church house nearby?" I asked. "Pastor and Mrs. Brown will take right good care of you up at Morningstar Baptist," he said, and with walking directions, he sent me on my way. But after I took a couple steps up the sidewalk, he called out. When I turned, he spoke to the stain on my dress and the marks on my arm that weariness had me forgetting to hide. "But miss, if you're looking for white folks, and I don't imagine that you would be, but say you are, well, you'd have to get all the way to the other side of the woods to find a single one." And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamila Minix, y'all. Moonrise over New Jessup. Great job, Jamila. Thank you so much. Jamila will join us after the show. The good folks at Square Books graciously have made the incredibly long, arduous journey from Square Books to the graduate and set up a table with Jamila's novel, and we will visit more and sign copies, and it is a good one. That great pig roast scene will make you hungry, even if you've eaten, so don't even try to ward that off. And there's also a heartbreaking scene where they go to a dance, and Sam Cooke is the entertainment. Oh, man, yes. It's good stuff in there. Great job, Jamila. All right, Allie Durr, you're a songwriter and a vocalist. You've got a song in a movie, I'm From You. Very nice. Boy, I hope those checks are rolling in. Ah, man, because it's not going to happen after tonight, I can tell you. No, I'm kidding. From Jackson, Mississippi area? All right. Fine songwriter. As I mentioned, plenty of moxie. She's going to sing with the Yalla Bushwhackers. Y'all welcome Allie Durr.
How y'all doing? I'm so glad to be here. So these songs that I wrote are basically, I also write poetry as well. And so I just from experiences and just from what, you know, my village has taught me and what they raised me on. So I write based on how I feel and, you know, in the moment and just experiences. So I hope you guys will enjoy the music tonight. And this wonderful band. Thank you. You know it, you know. When we're younger, we wouldn't, you know, we don't listen often, but until we get into some trouble, then we got to figure out, you know, how to get ourselves out. So what you got to listen. My mom is here. Y'all give it up for my mom. She came with along with me. This next song is called What You Living For. We have been through a lot, you know, during the pandemic. You know, a lot of people lost their loved ones. A lot just been going on television-wise. And we just have to be unified. Love is the key, you know. So this is another, I wrote it as a poetry, and then it came to a song. So I hope y'all like it. Next song is called Don't Let It Go. It's a bit groovy, so you know, y'all can get up if y'all want to, you know. Yeah. This song is called Don't Let Go. It's about not giving up on your dreams, your aspirations. Just staying in the game, you know? I know I'm 27 years old. And, you know, in our 20s, sometimes we have a few options, and sometimes we're not stable. Sometimes we, you know, we think about doing one thing, then we do another thing, and then we get often discouraged because it doesn't work out. But we just can't let go of our dreams because it's what life is about, process and, you know, trusting. But yeah, we're gonna do this, okay? Thank you.
y'all so much.
Allie Durr, y'all, let her hear you. Man. I cannot carry a tune in a pickle bucket, but I believe that young lady can sing, ladies and gentlemen. Even I can hear that. Thank you, Allie. That was great. And the Yellow Bushwhackers, how about them? They can play with anybody. Yeah, you did. One more time for all our guests, y'all. This has been a great evening here in the graduate. R.L. Boyce, the great R.L. Boyce. He's rolling. He's tumbling. Jamila Minix in this beautiful book. Thank you, Jamila. Moonrise over New Jessup. We will be over here at the table joining Jamila afterwards. One more time again for Allie Durr. Thank you, Allie. Thanks, Mom, for coming up. We'll be back at the Powerhouse next week, our usual haunt, with Sadidqua Johnson. Is that her name? You know her? House of Eve. Great. Songwriter Kevin Abernathy and our old buddies, beer-drinking gospel music, Rocket 88, y'all, at the Powerhouse. Also remind you, if you're new to the show, we have a sign-up table over here. You can be a Thacker Becker. And it's surprisingly economical and fun and easy. If you don't feel like fooling with the sign-up sheet, go by and say hey to our interns. They get lonely over there. And visit us online where you can join up also, ThackerMountain.com. Let's keep these shows coming. Y'all are some great, great folks to come out. Thank you, Graduate Hotel. What a cozy, wonderful atmosphere. Thanks for having us here. We'll see y'all on the radio.
Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front-of-house engineer is Blake Gardner.